The League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County is proud to present tonight's forum on the Medicare reimbursement system and how it affects all of us, public and private health care providers and health care recipients, seniors, children, young adults, everyone. My name is Trudy Jarrett. I'm a member of the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County, and I currently serve as Vice President of the League of Women Voters of the State of California. League is a nonpartisan political organization of informed women and men. We encourage informed and active participation in government, work to increase understanding of major public policy issues, and influence public policy through education and advocacy. Supervisor Bruce Gibson recently called League, quote, the gold standard on issues in substance. We help citizens make an informed difference. And that's why we're hosting this forum this evening. It's our expectation that at the end of the forum tonight, citizens of San Luis Obispo will contact their elected officials, their congresspersons, and their senators with their questions, their concerns, and their support for appropriate legislation to address the issue we'll be learning about this evening. Medicare reimbursement rates were established in the 1960s. The last major adjustment was in 1996. Its outdated geographic practice cost index has not kept up with our changing county. Congresswoman Capps and our former Congressman Bill Thomas had some small success in the past, but there are still major inequities that need to be addressed. Congresswoman Capps has recently co-authored legislation that she had hoped would accurately reflect the cost of practicing medicine in our county. It did pass the House, but it has been stalled in the Senate. Congressman McCarthy has recognized this issue as a major problem, and he has said that we need to, quote, ensure our reimbursement rates to our doctors are fair, and he, too, is pursuing an avenue to try to correct this situation. This is a time when informed citizens in our county can speak out and raise their voices and let our elected officials know that we want them to work on this issue and for once and for all, resolve it fully. This evening, we're going to learn about the current Medicare reimbursement rates and how it affects our ability to attract and to retain our physicians and our nurses. We're also going to learn about a lawsuit that our county is involved in with four other California counties where we feel, or our county feels, that the Medicare reimbursement rates are not appropriate for this county. Before I introduce our very distinguished panel, I would like to recognize those organizations that have made this forum possible this evening. AGP Video is taping this forum. It is being shown on Charter Cable Channel 21. It will be rebroadcast. You can check their website at www.slowspan.org for the schedule. It will run throughout the month of October. Arroyo Grande Community Hospital has been with us from the beginning when this forum was just a thought. And they are one of our supporters and our sponsors and have provided a panelist for this evening. The County of San Luis Obispo have practices internal medicine with an emphasis on preventative care and occupational injuries. His practice is in Los Osos, and he's a very respected member of the medical profession. To his left is Debbie Reeves. Debbie is the Director of Revenue Services for Arroyo Grande, French, and Marion Hospitals, part of the Catholic Healthcare West family. She has had other positions in the healthcare field. She has been a director of medical services and a director of managed care. To her left is Dr. Gregory Thomas, our county public health officer, who has done a wonderful job making sure that public health is handled in a timely way, in a very effective way. To his left, Dr. Fred Vernacchia. Dr. Vernacchia is the medical director of San Luis Diagnostic Center. He's been a physician in our county for some years, and he is a very respected member of our medical community. Tonight, he is representing the San Luis Obispo County Medical Association. To focus the discussion tonight, the League has provided our panelists with 6 questions. League members have written those questions. League volunteers will be going through the audience in the chambers this evening, providing paper and pencil for members of the audience to write down questions. Those questions will be asked during the last half hour of this forum. Each panelist will have 2 minutes to respond to each question. There is one exception. Dr. Thomas has a question that's just his. It has to do with the class action suit regarding Medicare reimbursement rates. He will have 3 minutes to respond to that question. In the front of this room is Mr. Robert Dougal. He is the timekeeper for the League. Those of you that have been to our forums in the past know that we always have a timekeeper. He will be telling our panelists when their time is up. With that, we're going to begin our questions. I'm going to start the first question by asking Dr. Gamara to respond first. How does the current Medicare reimbursement rate structure affect your ability to provide health care services?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me to talk. I'm an internist, solo practitioner, and in a small business environment. And the Medicare rates over the past few years have not increased. In fact, this year they're threatening to take a 10% cut. Every year it seems 5% is the usual norm, and then eventually they last minute say, well, we're not going to increase you, but we're not going to decrease you, but we're not going to increase you. So running a small business, as you know, we have a lot of costs. Electricity goes up, malpractice, just about everything goes up every year. So to sustain that in solo practice, it's very difficult. I have polled physicians this past month from various specialties, and Medicare, for example, for oncology, are really not reimbursing for chemo agents, and so they're having a predicament to actually give for free in some circumstances the chemotherapy to kind of balance things. So it's very difficult for them to have costly medications on board and Medicare not really reimbursing at good rates. Even for preventive services, the bone density machines, Medicare in a few years, they're going to cut about one-fifth of the rate that they were paying last year. So a lot of the costs are not being met by the reimbursement rates.
Doctor, if I could, I had heard recently that Congress is considering a further 10% cut to Medicare. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Reeves?
I, too, say thank you for having me here. And I'm you probably don't really hear the hospital side of it that often. You hear the physician side. So this is a little bit different perspective that you're going to hear from me. First, let me say, no matter what type of insurance our patients have, it's our priority to provide the best care available. With that being said, Medicare is approximately 55% of our business. Medicare reimbursement generally does not meet our cost, and even in specific cases where surgical implant costs are high, we lose money. The current Medicare reimbursement structure doesn't pay separately for implants like pacemakers, total knees, and total hips. Reimbursement is bundled all into one set payment amount, regardless of the cost of the implant. New technology for implants and prosthetics is something we as hospital providers want to provide to our patients. Medicare
patient to a lot of pregnant women and women with very young children. And that generally is not the Medicare population. The However, our interest is very strong in making sure that we can get our patients and our the population that we're entrusted to care for to be able to get them into physicians and other medical providers. And so our interest is aligned with the medical providers that there be adequate reimbursement that people can get in to receive care. We have a mental health part of the health agency at the county, includes the mental health department. They have a larger number of Medicare individuals. And to the degree that we do not meet our cost and we have mandated care, our county general fund goes up. I can't quantitate that exactly, but I do know that particularly in the area of our psychiatric health facility, inpatient mental health unit, our costs are much higher than our reimbursement. And so that just causes us to have to go to the Board of Supervisors and ask for more county general fund because we can't turn people away from inpatient mental health unit.
So if I could, Dr. Thomas, I think one of the things you're telling us is that because Medicare reimbursement rates are not sufficient to cover the costs, that then the taxes that we pay here locally in the county, we have to dip into those funds to offset the loss. Is
yes,
that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Bernacchia.
Again, I want to thank the League of Women Voters. It's a true honor to be here and to represent the County Medical Association. Bob, can you put up slide one, the gap chart? I want to put the slide up because Dr. Gamara referred to it and you referred to it, and that was, you know, what is happening to rates, what's happening to our reimbursement rates. Can you slide that up just a little bit, Bob, so we can see the bottom of the chart? Slide up a bit. Yeah, there we go. What this chart shows, and mind you, this is published by the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services. That's the same organization that is deciding what doctors' reimbursement rates are. Okay, so at the same time that they know our costs are rising each year, and these are costs dating back to 2001. These are costs calculated by the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services. They know that our costs are rising as the top line goes. At the same time, they continue to propose cuts. And you can see, as Dr. Gamara said, if you look from 2001 to 2007, each and every one of those years, because of the flawed formula, we were faced with a 5% pay cut. At the last minute, literally every December 31st, Congress steps in and says, oh, we're not going to cut you. We're going to make you break even. The problem is, look at what happens when you break even. So since 2001, we've broken even, and our costs have gone up about 18%. Is that really breaking even? That's what's happening, and that's how it's impacting you as a senior citizen here and how you get your care. The question, though, says specifically, how does the reimbursement rate affect your, meaning my, ability to provide healthcare services? Little known to most of the public, in the wee hours of December 31st, 2005, the federal government, Congress, passed a bill called the Deficit Reduction Act. Within that Deficit Reduction Act, they buried a clause that said we are going to slash payments for imaging services on average 30%. So what that means is that in my particular practice, Medicare, that represents about 30 to 35% of my practice, the rates were cut 30%. So that amounts to about a 10 to 15% cut, depending on what the payer mix is. That obviously affects my ability to buy equipment, to pay the personnel, to pay my rent, to basically cover costs. But how does it impact you? The way it impacts you is, if I can't cover those expenses and I can't buy new equipment to service you and to provide new technology for you, what that means is that instead of you being able to get your PET scan done locally or your MR scan done locally or whatever new technology comes along tomorrow, you'll be hopping in your car and driving to LA or the Bay Area because their rates for the same service we provide is 40% higher.
Thank you. And that leads us right into our next question, Doctor. Ms. Reeves, if you could be the first one, please, to answer our second question. How do these rates impact, how do these rates impact the county's ability?
I'd like to share some examples of reimbursement. For outpatient procedures, on average, hospitals in the Los Angeles area get 2% more, and in the San Francisco area, they get 21% more than our Central Coast hospitals. For inpatient services, the gap gets greater. And when I did this research this afternoon, I was actually shocked. Both LA and San Francisco hospitals get 80 to 90% higher reimbursement than our Central Coast hospitals do.
Excuse me, could you repeat that last? That is amazing to me.
That is, and I had to put it on a grid and look at the data and do the calculation. It's 80 to 90%, and it varied. There was one other procedure that I looked up, and it was a hernia repair, and actually that was 200% higher. We get it's on a DRG-based system that we get payment, and we would get a little over $3,000 for...
Could you explain DRG?
Diagnostic-related group.
Thank you.
Okay. How your payment for a hospitalization for a Medicare patient is determined. It's determined by the diagnosis that flow into kind of a grid that you have behind the scenes, and it comes up with a DRG, diagnostic-related group. And you're paid, say DRG 140 is for a hernia repair. Mm-hmm. At our Central Coast hospitals, and that would include, I would think, most of the Central Coast hospitals, including our Tenet hospitals, too, they're going to get about $3,000. San Francisco is going to get $7,000 for that same surgery, that same hospitalization. And I don't believe that their resources are going to cost them any more than they're going to cost down here. I think Los Angeles... Los Angeles was a little bit higher at a little less than $6,000 for that same hernia.
Thank you. Dr. Thomas.
I'm going to pass on this question because Dr. Vernacchia, representing the Medical Society, has really done a lot of work on this and over the years, and I'm going to waive my time to him.
Well, you will have the next question to yourself, so that's perfectly all right.
Okay.
Dr. Vernacchia.
Sure. It's a simple arithmetic problem. How do these rates affect your ability to attract and retain? I was talking to a friend of mine at one of the Medical Society meetings the other night, and we'd been in town a long time. I've been here 20-plus years. And we're discussing the fact that it's been since 1989 since we had our last neurosurgeon move to town. It has been since 1989 that our last urologist moved to town, who stayed more than 3 years. So just take a simple thing and how that affects our ability to retain them. A couple things that you need to know as consumers is that these are specialists that don't just take care of elective things, but they take care of emergency situations or people that have dire problems. Let's say you have a really, really serious herniated disc in your back. I don't know if you've ever seen anybody who has an acute disc herniation, but they are absolutely miserable. They hurt. They can't get comfortable. Well, if we don't have any neurosurgeons to take care of you, well, we'll just pop you in a car and drive you to some county that's got 40% more than we do to fix you. Okay, that's the kind of impact you have. Let's say you have a kidney stone and you're writhing in pain from the. Well, if we have no urologist to come to the emergency room to take care of you, what do we do? Got to hop you in a car and drive you somewhere where you can get care. That's how these rates impact you, okay? So the ability to attract and retain physicians, we have had innumerable, database statistics that show we are in a net negative physician count in this county, and we have been that way since the year 2000. So that answers that question. And by the way, in terms of difference in percentages, I alluded to that. In my specialty, the difference between San Luis Obispo and San Francisco is 40%. I've talked to my colleagues in clinical practice, like Dr. Gamara. The difference for the kind of codes that he charges are as much as 25% between San Francisco and San Luis Obispo. That is really significant.
That certainly is significant, Doctor. I wonder if you could tell me, I had heard that cardiologists in our county, the average age of our cardiologists is in the 50s or so. We need young doctors to replace them.
That does not surprise me. It's what I say all the time is, who's going to be here to take care of me? I mean, who's going to be here? I don't know. And why am I on this panel? I'm hoping to get it fixed so that I don't have to retire and move to some other county.
None of us want to move to another county, so we're all going to work together to try to improve the situation. Okay. We're going to now move on to question number 3, and this
is a big issue. If someone's graduating from school or residency program, they're burdened already with $250,000 in their school loans, and it's very difficult for them just to even get a jump start, let alone to think about opening a practice. So those are things that I've seen in my short time of the county. I don't see it getting better. I try to count how many new interns or family practice, and I can only come up with 2. So this trend will continue if things are not changed.
Thank you very much, and I do apologize for missing you.
I'm sorry. It's really difficult. I'm having difficulty.
Okay. Bob, can we get some more volume? Okay, can you hear me now? You cannot.
You know, I can go ahead and start talking, and I tend to speak really close to the microphone, and so some of the microphones are a little better.
We will move closer to the mic, so that should help. Thank you very much for letting us know. Dr. Thomas, let me just tell the audience what the question is to remind them.
Okay.
I know you're anxious. What is the status of the class action suit filed by the county against Medicare? And this is a question unique to Dr. Thomas's position.
Okay, well, San Luis Obispo joined 6 other counties, San Diego, Santa Barbara, Santa Cruz, Marin, Sonoma, Monterey. If you look at the geography of that, they're all coastal counties with rather high costs. And so these 7 counties, we are claiming that we are incorrectly and unfairly lumped with low-cost rural counties for rate-setting purposes, the so-called gypsy or geographic, I don't even know what the whole thing stands for.
Practice cost index.
The geographic practice cost index. That we're in Region 99, which is basically all of the rural counties, and if you've been out to try and buy a house recently, you realize that both renting an office and buying a house is much, much higher here than it is in Kern County. So we're classified with rural counties. Our county council filed joined the suit. There is a private attorney group from Millbrae that is handling this, and therefore it's a contingent basis case they're carrying, and therefore the county is not going to have to pay legal fees unless there is a recovery. We as the county really are not going to gain significantly economically, except perhaps in the psychiatric health facility and some of our mental health patients. But it is clearly in the patient's interest that there be adequate numbers of physicians in all the specialties so that there is a physician on call at the hospital you arrive at if you have a broken leg. You need an orthopedist, for example, and you don't really want to have to be shipped in an ambulance with your broken leg. So at this point, this was filed in June of 2007, and at this point, the attorneys for the counties have made a Freedom of Information Act requesting documents and data supporting how the rates have been set for the number of years in the past. They did say that in July, the HHS, Health and Human Services, at the federal level issued a proposed change in the rule regarding rate setting methodology and pay structure. It's unknown whether the proposed change was due in part to the litigation, but I frankly don't know the status of that as of today.
Okay. Well, we look forward to getting future updates on this class action suit. Before we go on to the next question, I would like to take a moment for our listening audience, because those of you watching on the television screen, there should be a scroll along the bottom that tells you how to contact your congresspersons or your senators. So those who are listening on the radio, if you get a piece of paper and a pen, I'm going to give you the phone numbers for Congresswoman Capps, area code 805-546-8348, Congressman McCarthy, area code 805-549-0930, Senator Feinstein, area code 415-393-0707, Senator Boxer, area code.
Admit to the fact that at least hospitals have gotten a little bit of a raise. If you look at the center column, underneath it says hospitals. Well, if you look at the columns as you go from that would be from left to right, those are 4 years, 2004, 2005, 2006, and 2007, and what increases have been given. If you look at what's happened to Medicare Advantage plans, those are the Medicare HMOs and the insurance companies that get paid for Medicare, hospitals, next is nursing homes, and then as you squeeze down lower in the chart, you can see where physicians have been in terms of the priority of your federal government. How does it impact you? Well, let's look at what should have happened with some of that money from the Medicare Advantage plan. San Francisco Chronicle this week. Private insurance companies participating in Medicare have been allowed to keep tens of millions of dollars that should have gone to consumers, and the Bush administration did not properly audit the companies or try to recover money in error, congressional investigators say in a new report. In 2003, Medicare audited 49 of 220 organizations participating in the program. Auditors found significant errors in 41 of the 49 companies. But Medicare officials took no action on the findings. As a result of the errors, the auditors said insurers kept, quote, $59 million that beneficiaries, all of you, could have received in additional benefits, lower copayments, or lower premiums. At the same time, in a separate action, the Bush administration is vigorously pursuing money it says is owed to insurance companies by Medicare beneficiaries. Medicare has sent letters to more than 135,000 people saying that they still owe premiums for prescription drug benefits provided in 2006. So, how do reimbursement rates affect, in what ways do these reimbursement rates affect you? It's obvious. If we don't get money going to the providers, the actual people providing the care, how are we supposed to pay for doctors? How are we supposed to pay for the equipment that we use to diagnose you, to treat you? How's the oncologist supposed to buy their chemotherapy? Money's just not going where it should go. And we can talk about health plans later.
Thank you. Dr. Gamarra?
Well, it really impacts as practices close or we can't attract physicians. The big problem is access. And so if you call around to physicians and some of the more established physicians, they're not even open. So what happens? Well, our ERs get busier. And so in some respects, our ERs are doing primary care, and they're frustrated. But it's really based on numbers. I think that over the past years, as I mentioned, the amount of people going to other places, it's very, very difficult. And even for younger patients, a young patient this week came to my office and had some dermatology questions, and she called, and it would be 6 months for a new patient for dermatology. So it's not only seniors, but it's also, it's really young and old.
Thank you. Ms. Reeves.
Actually, to reiterate what Dr. Gamora just said, with more physicians opting out of the Medicare program due to diminishing reimbursement, it leaves seniors with the challenge of finding physicians who do take Medicare, hoping that physician doesn't already have a full practice. Certainly, out-of-pocket expenses will increase for those seniors opting to see non-participating providers. Not only do we have a primary care provider crunch in the Central Coast, but when patients need to see a specialist, the wait time in order to get an appointment may be too long, possibly forcing the patient to go outside the community for specialty care.
Ms. Reeves, could you perhaps comment on something that Dr. Gamora said about the impact on hospital emergency rooms, because citizens in this county might not be able to see a physician during office hours?
We have seen an increase in emergency room visits. To be honest with you, I am not sure that it's directly because they haven't been able to get into to see their primary care, or even if they have a primary care physician. Mm-hmm. But I suspect if we did some research, we'd probably find that out.
Thank you. Dr. Thomas.
I think it's obvious that if there are not physicians willing to see patients in Medicare, who is able to accept Medicare, there aren't enough psychiatrists. There is a shortage of psychiatrists in the community that aren't working for Atascadero State Hospital or California Men's Colony, because you can go out there and make over $200,000 for working in that setting per year. And then you don't have to send anybody any bills. You just get paid. And those folks need care, but it is a very competitive area. So who suffers when there's no psychiatrist available to take care of seniors? Seniors. Particularly in the nursing home, it's a huge burden. They don't have the option of getting in a car and driving to another area to see a specialist.
Thank you, Doctor. I'm now going to move on to our fifth question. Do Medicare reimbursement rates affect other reimbursement rates? And for this question, we're going to start with Dr. Gamora.
It does. Over the years, especially in California, there are, and especially in this county, there's less and less insurance companies offering insurance. And a lot of times, they may not say this, but they do base it for Medicare. So each year, they might set a reimbursement, but they always look at Medicare, and Medicare for the last few years haven't really raised or compensated us. As a small solo practitioner, it is hard to negotiate with insurance companies, and even if a group practice, it's just the bigger groups, not that we have big groups in this county, but elsewhere, they might have a little more clout to do that, but as a solo practitioner, there really isn't.
Thank you, Doctor. Ms. Reeves?
Medicare has been used as a benchmark for managed care contracts for years. While many of the large health plans have their own fee schedules, smaller plans, such as CHW's Central Coast Employee Health Plan, use a percent of Medicare of the Medicare fee schedule to pay their providers. I'm happy to say that we locally, CHW, pay a higher percent than Medicare, but we do use Medicare guidelines when adjudicating claims. In my previous life before joining CHW, I was director of managed care for a large medical group here in San Luis Obispo, and even though we were a large medical group, we still didn't have the clout to be able to negotiate rates with some of the bigger payers that paid close to Medicare rates. Moving over to the hospital setting, luckily for us, we have a much stronger organization behind us, and we can negotiate a little better rate. Mm-hmm. But going back to the fact that we still have 55% of our patient population is Medicare, We have 55% where we can't negotiate.
And so you're also saying, though, that the Medicare rate set a benchmark.
Yes.
That is used often to determine the rates that are paid by other insurance companies and such.
Oh, absolutely.
So this does not just affect seniors. It affects everybody who relies on medical insurance to pay for their medical care. And
correct.
For those practitioners that need to be paid for their services.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Dr. Thomas.
Well, I'd like to step back for a moment and just say what a wonderful thing Medicare is. When you step back and think what was here before 1965, what seniors had to face if they couldn't pay for their medical care. Medicare does pay for medical services for 43 million Americans, aged and disabled. They spent, Medicare made $408 billion worth of payments on health care last year, $60 billion of it going to physician services, $150 billion going to hospital services. So I would hope we wouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater here. And as we call our congresspeople, say what a good system in a lot of ways Medicare has been. There is an element of it that is broken and needs to be fixed. If you look at the percentage of overhead in Medicare, it's below 5%. And you know, you look at some of the others in private insurance companies, and you're talking in the 25-30% sometimes. Huge, huge differences. Why are reimbursement rates for other insurances tied to Medicare rates? Because they are the gorilla in the chair. And that's what Blue Cross...
physicians and hospitals to cover the cost of the care. Wasn't to make a profit. It was to cover the cost of the care. We're now where everybody is tied to Medicare. And in this state, most reimbursement rates are somewhere between 85% of Medicare rates up to 110% of Medicare rates. So we're on average getting rates that, quote, cover cost, except those rates keep going down as our costs keep going up. So, you know, the question was, does it affect other reimbursement rates? It affects every reimbursement rate. The other thing, recognizing that it affects every rate, with that said, there are pockets in this country where, for instance, Durango, Colorado is one, where you cannot go see a doctor without flashing a credit card. Okay? They will not take your Medicare card. Okay, they don't care you don't have HMOs, you don't have the Medicare plan at all. It's, this is the cost of your care, give me your credit card, write your check, okay, or go somewhere else. The problem is, there is nowhere else to go. So, if we don't fix this part of the problem, you may be facing that here too.
Thank you, Doctor. We're about to come to our last of the six questions that League prepared. For those people in the audience who would like to submit their questions, if you haven't already done so, this is the time to hand your questions in, and if those questions will be brought forth here to me, and then I can ask them. Thank you. What can the public do? What actions are needed by our representatives to change the current situation so that healthcare providers in our county are on equal footing with other California counties? We're going to start response to that question with Debbie Reeves.
I think certainly what you're doing tonight, coming and attending this forum, is a big step. Keep as informed as possible, not only about the rates, but also about your benefits. Off that subject a little bit, it does appear that we've made some ground some ground has been made with respect to rural county reimbursement. Again, this is for the hospital. We just got word that our wage index for 2008 is a bit higher than that of the Los Angeles area. In the past, it's been significantly lower. The national payment rate for each service that we provide is multiplied by your wage index to calculate your payments. We might then be more in line with the LA area with respect to hospital outpatient services. I hesitate to say we're going to get higher reimbursement in 2008 because we found that when Medicare giveth, they taketh away. The wage index may be going up, but the national payment rate might go down. Until the final rates are published, we aren't sure where we'll be.
Thank you, Debbie. And now Dr. Thomas.
Well, clearly this is, to me, a political issue. It's an issue of where the nation puts its priorities. Does the nation put its priorities in trips to ill-advised trips overseas to defend the oil system, or does it want to put its priorities into the not B-1 bombers, but people? And I think that we need clearly to send a message to our elected officials, loud and clear. I think that's one of the messages that I'm sure we'll all say. But maybe given the clout that some of the economic forces, including insurance companies, have to support politicians at the state and national level, until we have campaign reform, we may not have that significant change. So I'll go one step back beyond just calling your legislators. If they're being taken out to dinner and harangued enough by lobbyists, then it's hard for them to do the right thing. There was a poll last year. Right now, nationally, 73% of physicians were accepting new Medicare patients. And a poll last year, I believe it was in December, said...
$10. Do you know how many lobbyists $10 million buys? That's one day. Okay? So if you ask how you're going to reform the system, it is extraordinarily hard to reform a system that can spit out that much money to try to keep it the status quo. So that's what you can do at the state level. At the federal level, I think there's absolutely no question that we have some support from our congresspeople. I urge those of you in North County and areas of Arroyo Grande, with your representative in that area, that person seems to be misled, and that is they propose that the program, the health professional shortage area program, could increase Medicare payments to our doctors by 10%. If the application to the program is approved, this increase over almost eight times larger than the 1.2% legislative proposal referenced above could provide needed payment relief for our doctors. We have been trying to get that plan for the last 5 years. Okay, I will read this from our other senator or our other congressperson. That approach was rejected by the Bush administration, which says at this point San Luis Obispo does not qualify as such according to Medicare rules. So in other words, we're not a rural area, so we can't have a health professional shortage area. But you are a rural area because we're going to pay your Region 99 rates.
Thank you. Dr. Gamarra.
Yeah, I think that just to echo some of the sentiments, in talking with my colleagues in the medical community, that 10% is going to hit practitioners very hard. And I just hope they don't, because the sentiment out there is not good among doctors. I think the awareness is important. I had a patient this week that was just joining Medicare, and, you know, I talked to her, and hopefully she's listening. I think this is great as a forum to get the word out. I always like to put in action. That's why I'm here. And so I hope that people would call, write, you know, because this is really your health care. And I think that the panel has been very good to explain what the county is going through. And we really don't want change in regards to what might be facing the practitioners. We really want to avoid that. But now's the time to really put into action and call your congressman and vote people in that will support us.
Thank you. And from the League's perspective, both your congresspersons and your senators should be contacted with your feelings about this issue. Before I go on to the written questions, I'd like to just take a moment to remind our listening audience that they can reach Congresswoman Capps at area code 805-546-8348, Congressman McCarthy at area code 805-461-1034, Senator Feinstein, area code 415-393-0707, and Senator Boxer, area code 202-224-3553. And if you do have access to the internet, please do access the San Luis Obispo County League of Women Voters website that has more contact information for each of these individuals at www.lwvslo.org. I have been asked to make an announcement before we go on to the questions from the audience. There is a no-host coffee and wine gathering for an informal continuation of this discussion at the new restaurant in town, Naples 1009, at 1009 Monterey Street, just past the Fremont Theater. So you're welcome to join League members and others there if you'd like to continue this discussion. And also, I want to remind you that there's information at the back of the room, including written statements from Congresswoman Capps and Congressman McCarthy on this issue. And now for the written questions. This first question we've pretty much answered, but it's worth pointing out, I think. If we were to call or write our congressman to fix the problem, what specifically should we ask them to do? What? Thank you. Dr. Thomas?
Three words. Fix the gypsy. Fix the geographic pricing cost index.
Would you say that a second time, please, so for the benefit of the audience?
It's fix the gypsy. Fix the geographic pricing cost index. Is that? And secondly, rescind the overall. First of all, you got to fix the geographic balance so that San Luis Obispo is paid fairly. And secondly, you've got to fix the overall problem nationwide of allowing cost of living, appropriate cost of business increases for the cost of medical care.
Thank you. Dr. Pinocchio.
Three words. Fix the SGR. The SGR is the sustainable growth rate, which was the chart that I showed at the very beginning. As much as the regional 99 problem has hurt us, the SGR's hurt us even more, okay, because it's been compounding. So you got to fix both of them. The other thing is the regional adjustment must be the entire country needs to be relooked at and determine what is really rural, what is really urban. The problem with that politically is the people currently in the most urban areas are the people getting the most money. Okay, they also contain the most people, so they contain the most votes. So the problem you have is you're fighting an uphill battle where the rural people are getting the least money They have the least amount of money to pay for lobbyists. They have the least amount of money, and they have the fewest people. So it's a real problem politically.
It is a problem, but I do submit that we have a room full of lobbyists here tonight, and I certainly hope that you become full-time lobbyists on this issue. Our next question. Are doctors required to take Medicare patients?
No.
No.
Thank you. That was an easy one. To what extent is the problem SLO County is facing the result of the county being misclassified as being rural, which I think perhaps we have addressed, versus Medicare reimbursement rates being too low generally? I believe we may have addressed that, but if anybody wishes to add anything else to that question?
Well, I think we certainly could live off of San Francisco rates.
I am sure you're correct about that, Doctor. How can Medicare incentivize physicians and hospitals to keep costs down without freezing reimbursement? I'd like to start with Dr. Thomas.
Well, it's easier to do in a managed care environment where and frankly, we're moving into Medi-Cal managed care in March of 2008, where there is a local entity. It's called a county organized health system. There's a local board of directors made up of physicians, government officials, and consumers. So there is a local board to respond to instead of responding to Sacramento or Washington. And in that venue, you can provide incentives to increasing quality of care. So the number of hours the office is open after normal working hours, immunization rates, mammogram rates, flu vaccine and pneumococcal vaccine rates, and patient satisfaction. There's a lot of indexes that can be used to judge quality of care. It's not perfect, and sometimes the best bedside manner the best bedside manner and the physicians that are loved the most because their interpersonal interactions with patients, they're not always technically the best. Sometimes they are, and so those are the ones to go for. Doctor you like that is also technically very good. In the fee-for-service system, they are working on ways to do the same kinds of things. The information systems in a fee-for-service system need to be worked on so that we can get a better handle on those same questions. But I think they're valid questions for not only managed care companies, but also physicians working on Medicare patients in that fee-for-service system.
Thank you, Doctor. Dr. Panaki.
That's a tough question. I think, I certainly want to try to be as politically correct as possible, but I think one of the things that you can do in a system to try to control
government should help us out. If they want this data, I think that they should really help out, because right now with the reimbursement rates, there's no really money to do that.
May I comment a little bit? Worse than that, what Medicare is threatening to do is to say, we're going to hold back 10% or 5% of your payments unless you give us the data. So worse than not even paying for it, they're saying, well, we're going to pay $100. No, we're going to pay $95. And then when you produce the data, we'll give you the extra 5%. It's not a pretty picture.
An interesting world. Ms. Reeves?
As a facility, we try and keep our costs down as best we can. I think for the two local hospitals of CHW, when Arroyo Grande and French became CHW, we had economies of scale. We had an infrastructure of management that helped us reduce our cost. And we do the best we can with that. However, being a Medicare provider in itself creates a tremendous amount of work, much more work. It creates work for the for the physician. But on the hospital side, there is so much behind-the-scenes compliance that we have to do that it's very difficult to keep some of your costs down when you have to hire people just to maintain your databases to make sure that every single code that you put on a claim is accurate. And because if you don't put it on, it you get huge issues with Medicare. So, again, we try our best to keep our costs down, but sometimes it's just doing the business itself with Medicare creates cost.
Mm, that's very interesting. Our next question, what is the greater problem, the Medicare rates or the rising number of uninsured? If we could begin that with Dr. Vernacchia, please.
It's a combination of both. There's no cost shifting anymore. Okay, back in the old days, believe it or not, prior to me even practicing, the private insurance companies paid more than Medicare rates. Once the Medicare fee schedule came out in 1990, the private insurers jumped all over it and said, "Wonderful! Okay, this is what we know it costs you. This is all we're going to pay you." So the problem we ran into is that the third-party payers started linking all their payment to the Medicare rates, which meant that the uninsured, as physicians, we had no additional income, no profits above and beyond the Medicare rates to take care of those people. So I'm sure in the hospital, I mean, you could actually afford to take care of the uninsured. Now that they've stripped all that money out and given it all to shareholders at the tune of $10 million a day for each one of them, how are we supposed to provide the care? It's going to shareholders and executives. We're still cost shifting. We're just shifting it to the executives and the shareholders.
Thank you. Dr. Kamara.
Well, in my practice and also probably others, folks are coming in paying more and more in cash. And so as the insurance companies, they're raising the premiums and, you know, living in this county, it can go so far. So that's what I see happening is that a lot more people are going uninsured, very nervous, and paying me cash, pretty much going back to the old days.
Wow. Ms. Reeves.
Coming, again, from private practice, then going to a hospital setting, private practice physicians do have the ability to not take some of the patients. If you're a cash patient and you don't pay your bill, you know, you can be, you know, your physician may not want to see you again. The hospital, we have to take them. And so I'm wondering if maybe we, on the hospital setting, we are even getting more of those patients because of that. But we take them all. And we do have certainly programs for the uninsured and cash patients. But
do you think that the uninsured is a greater problem than the Medicare rates? Or are they just tied together?
I think it's combined. It's a combined.
Okay. Dr. Thomas?
Tough answer. I am going to say that they're both huge. They're both very big problems. If you look at the public health perspective, this year, 73% of physicians are taking Medicare new patients, and 95% are seeing existing Medicare patients, and. As long as physicians...
With due respect, I will not note the individual who's brought this forward. However, there has been a proposition of a single-payer insurance program for all United States of America citizens. It would be an expanded Medicare program with very small overhead. Is this the direction we should go in solving these Medicare, current Medicare issues?
I'll be honest. I don't know the answer. Okay, I've been asked that many a time. And my response has always been, you know, if someone were to pay my salary and cover my overhead for a couple of years and give me the time to study it, maybe I could come up with a solution, but no one's volunteered. I don't know the solution, okay? I do know that a start to the solution, you know, as much as they talk about waste in the Medicare system, I really do think you have to go back to where we were in the 50s. And in the 50s, we had nonprofit hospitals, we had nonprofit insurance companies. Blue Cross, Blue Shield, all of those companies were formed for public benefit. They weren't formed for shareholder benefit. They were formed for public benefit. We've now allowed those companies to shift gears and become horrendous for-profit companies. And, you know, we talk about this all the time as a medical association. We keep scratching our heads and asking, exactly what value added do we get from the third-party payers, the insurance companies? And we've never figured it out. We'll sit there and talk a lot about what does Blue Cross add to the process other than another layer of bureaucracy and clearly skimming a sizable portion of dollars out of the healthcare system. The second question or the second issue has to do with the single payer system and how we restructure it. What that question is alluding to, I think, is more of a federal plan. We've had state plans, the Sheila Kuehl bill, which has twice now passed the Senate or passed the Assembly and passed the Senate of California State. Each time, it's been vetoed by the governor. The problem with that bill is, as much as there's one nice thing about it, it starts by eliminating the health plans. But the problem you have is you can't eliminate the health plans, which is why the bill will never pass. So it is a real trying to get to a single payer. I don't know how to do it. What does scare me, though, is I look at what Medicare has done as a single payer. And then you ask yourself, where are we today when we have a single payer controlling 45% of the market?
Thank you. Dr. Gamarra.
Yeah, I don't know the answer either. I wish I did. 10 years ago, I was talking to a cardiologist retiring, he thought, you know, I had lost a marble, but I was thinking about it that, and it's sort of looking like this, that I predicted back then that we might go back to the old days, where initially insurance was for catastrophic insurance, that if you entered into the emergency room or hospital, the insurance was there for you. We got away from people paying us or at least our visits from cash. And so I understand from the federal level there's just a budget and there's a certain amount of money there. And I guess they do their best to try to distribute it. But I think over the years, we've gotten away a little bit from really taking care of the major medical, so to speak. And so I think in the future we're going to have to make some sacrifices. You know, it's very difficult in healthcare because when you go to the emergency room or the physician's office and it's you, you want the best care. Those are hard choices sometimes to, if you want to ration care, because there's only a certain amount of money or budget. And so it's very, very difficult to really answer and figure out what the right answer is.
Thank you. Ms. Reeves?
Hypothetically, I think what a glorious thing it would be for many billing companies. Certainly the hospital has a huge billing office and to have one payer, one set of rules, one entity to call for follow-up for accounts receivable. But on the other hand, unless the structure gives reimbursement at a reasonable rate, you're really stuck then if you've got this one payer that isn't, I mean, right now from the hospital, I mean, we've got 55% of our business is Medicare, and we look to the other payers to make up that deficit so we can keep our doors open. So if we had a single payer that paid like Medicare, we would be
coming into providing that care. I did hear 2.9%. That's what I recollect the overhead is for Medicare. It's certainly under 5%. We pay so much money in the physician's office, the hospital, to justify the care that's provided, and then when you send all that paperwork to the insurance companies, they spend 25 or 30% of the premium dollar on in that kind of administration and paying their shareholders. Single-payer plan is looking better and better and better to a whole lot of people because of how challenging the system is right now.
With that, there are several other questions about single-payer health care. This forum tonight is specifically about Medicare, and I think we addressed to some degree what relationship might exist. The League will be holding future forums on the single-payer health care insurance issue. So I encourage you to go to our website at www.lwvslo.org, and you can find information on when these forums will occur. We would appreciate you being there. I think it would be very informative. And we'll continue with this discussion. Dr. Bernard.
Yeah, I have one question of the audience, because this is, you know, I've been scratching my head, and I don't see patients in the office who I prescribe drugs to. But I do have a lot of aunts and uncles and other relatives that are in the your age group, which I'm rapidly approaching. The question I have is, with regard to the Part D drug benefit, all of my relatives have seen their costs go up. Has anybody, can I have a straw poll here in the audience of, if you could raise your hand and say, you know, my pharmaceutical costs out of pocket have gone down with Part D?
We can allow
we
that.
Got,
my
we
fathers
got,
have.
Can we do that? One? Okay. How many have had your drug?
I'm out of Part D. I'm the smart one.
Okay. So, and how many people with Part D have seen their drug costs go up? One and one.
One to one.
Are people not covered by? You've left me just as confused as I came in here with.
Well, we're sorry about that.
That's okay. That's okay.
Now, the other two questions that do relate more directly to Medicare, I'm going to have to reword because League has a policy of having positive statements here. So if you'll bear with me, and members of the audience that wrote this, if you'll please bear with me. One would be addressed to the hospital, but I would ask any physician to please jump in if you'd like. And it deals with the charges for Medicare, patients who come in for Medicare versus a non-insured patient, that there is a wide gap between those two costs. So they're wondering if that's so, and if so, why would that be?
Our charges are our charges. They're the same if you're a Medicare patient, if you're a Blue Cross patient, if you're a cash patient. When you're a Medicare patient, we bill Medicare for you. Medicare pays us based on the Medicare allowable. And then if it's an outpatient service, you're going to pay a percent, 20% of the Medicare allowable. If you're a cash patient, Catholic Healthcare West has many programs for cash patients, uninsured, underinsured, and then discounts are offered to them based on financial ability to pay. Mm-hmm. If you're a Blue Cross patient, you're going to pay based on your Blue Cross benefit plan and what the copays are. But the charges themselves do not change from payer to payer. We have one database.
Okay, thank
you. Does that answer that?
I think that does. The question was, are there different databases from which you charge?
No, there's only one database.
There's it. Thank you. Now, this last question is our last question. It's a long question. Appropriate for the last question, I think. And it is geared to a statement that Dr. Thomas made, but anyone, of course, can respond. And Dr. Thomas, it was regarding the statement that Medicare administration cost is about 5% and that other medical insurance administration costs are roughly 25%. This individual has an understanding that the 5% figure might not be all that accurate and that many administration costs are passed on to physicians' offices and hospitals. and they wonder if some light could be shed on this. And this is under the Medicare. So could you shed some light on this, Doctor?
Well, with both systems, a lot of those administrative...
One can look at it and say Medicare pays the insurance company that's overseeing it 2.5 to 5% or whatever it is. So that number gets bandied about as saying that's the overhead cost of Medicare. Okay, the reality is that that insurance company that is the middleman for Medicare has additional overhead. The difference is Medicare is not paying it. It's coming out of the cost of the insurance company. So I think that there's a little bit of deception in thinking that it's 2.5% or 5%. That may be the premium that Medicare pays to the intermediary, but the intermediary has administrative costs that are coming out of the dollars that are otherwise going to beneficiaries. Does that, I think that makes sense.
It does make sense.
Because there is no
clearly
Medicare.
It's a complex issue.
Yeah, there is no Medicare administration per se. They're not the people cutting the checks to you or to the providers or adjudicating your claims. There's in our area, it's National Heritage Insurance Corporation
and Mutual of Omaha for the physician
for the hospital. So you've got money going to an intermediary, but Medicare's, let's say, expense that doesn't come out of Medicare is 2.5%. But there's costs involved for that that insurance company.
Thank you. I think that would be helpful to that question. Dr. Thomas, you have another comment, and we must move on.
Okay. There are plans that can do it for under 10% when you put both of you look at both sides of that. So that Kaiser is one example, and the Santa Barbara Regional Health Authority is another on the Medi-Cal side.
Oh, it can be done for under 10%.
Well, thank you. I'd like to thank the members of our very distinguished panel. I think the information you provided tonight has been very enlightening, and I would like to thank the audience for your attention. The League hopes that the information that was presented this evening, it was helpful in furthering your understanding of how current Medicare reimbursement rates affect all of us. As informed citizens of San Luis Obispo County, the League encourages you to be lobbyists. Raise your voice. Let your concerns be known to your elected officials, your congresspersons, and your senators. Tell them that you are concerned about an outdated and flawed Medicare reimbursement system, and you want them to keep it as a top priority until it's resolved. Discuss the other items that you heard tonight from this fine panel about issues that do affect Medicare and therefore affect all of us. Whether we're seniors, children, or young adults, we're all affected by this situation. When you raise our voices as a group in a chorus, we can make a difference. On behalf of the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County, I'd like to thank all of you for coming tonight. Again, I would like to thank our panel for being here. I'd like to thank the viewing audience as well as our listening audience. And I leave you with this thought. With your involvement, good government can be the usual and not the unusual. Good night. Thank you.